Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Cocaine Bear, Jesus Revolution, Linoleum, Kunk on Earth, and The Consultant. I'll also be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring a look back at the original Fawlty Towers. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big piece of news is the release of Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania and its box office from last week. It made $106 million over the three-day weekend, and then when you add in Monday's numbers, it was about $120 million, which is actually really good. And here's why this is actually really good for the Ant-Man franchise. It's a step up. Each Ant-Man movie has made more money in its opening weekend over the course of its three-movie run. And part of that obviously has to do with the fact that it's not just about Ant-Man. It's a lot of times setting the stage or bridging the gap between elements of the Marvel Universe. The first Ant-Man was very self-contained about this Scott Lang character and his development as Ant-Man. But by the time you got to Ant-Man and the Wasp, which was a second movie, that one happened after Infinity War, and it leads into Endgame. And then now you've got Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania essentially being that first broad step into Phase 5 of the Marvel Universe. And that makes sense as to why the numbers have gone up for this one. But still, it's a relatively low opening weekend for a Marvel property. What's causing more people to take notice is the fact it's got like, that's like a 53 or 47% Rotten Tomatoes score. It's tied with Eternals as one of the lowest Rotten Tomatoes scores of any Marvel movie. And a lot of people, especially people in my business, the movie review world, are taking note of that and going, see, look how stupid it is. And it's that people are getting to franchise fatigue and everybody's hating it. Marvel's, it's stupid. And everyone, it's like you talked about last week when I said there are people that are just wanting this franchise to fail. Because, yeah, sure, there's people who are tired of it. And you get this with the people who have to go see the movies. People in my job got so PO'd at the Twilight series, they just were so mad it existed because they had to cover it every year. And that's different for your average person who, if they're not interested in the movies, they don't care. There's a lot of people that knew Twilight existed, but it didn't affect them because they didn't go see the Twilight movies. And there's a lot of people, if you're tired of the Marvel movies, stop going to see them, but they still make a ton of money and they still are very much a crowd pleaser of a film. And one of the things you note with like sequels, but also franchises in general, is a lot of times their legs are shorter. They do very, very well that first weekend, but they're very front-loaded, and they drop off quickly. And that's happened with the last couple Marvel movies, in particular Thor, Love and Thunder, and Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. But that's normal. That's what happens. Eventually, you distill a fan base, and there's still a huge fan base. Yes, can you find people that are annoyed with the Marvel movies? Absolutely. Can you find people that are like, oh, they're just stupid special effects and people acting against blue screens and it's ruining cinema. How dare you? You know, people said that about Star Wars back in the 70s and 80s. Well, especially in the 80s when Star Wars changed the face of event movies and blockbusters and special effects. There were people that were just slagging all over Star Wars because it was ruining smaller cinema. It's not Marvel that's causing the problem. Why not blame Top Gun, too? Top Gun's the same thing. It's a button-pushy, feel-good event kind of a film. And but of course, everyone, no, you can't kill a sacred cow like Top Gun because right now we love Tom Cruise. Forget the couch jumping in the Scientology. We love Tom Cruise now because he made me feel good about myself and my country. But the reality is $106 million for a three-day weekend in February is pretty doggone good for an Ant-Man movie. And yeah, it's going to drop off fast. A lot of people who've seen it, I don't know if it's going to have legs. It's not going to play like Avatar: The Way of Water, which came in number second, a distant second with $6.5 million. But the other news with Avatar is it's now what, like the third highest grossing movie ever. I mean, worldwide. I'm not talking about in America. There's a lot of movies ahead of it now. But Avatar has always played to a worldwide audience. And it's still, if you talk per ticket, it's still way behind the first Avatar. And I don't even know if it's going to catch up with the box office. Magic Mike's Last Dance dropped 35%, which is actually a pretty good hold, but it did so poorly its first weekend, it only made $5 million and change. And it was almost beaten by Puss in Boots, which is, what is this, like the eighth or tenth week of the Puss in Boots movie being out there? And then Knock at the Cabin and 80 for Brady were down there. Marlowe, which was another wide release, I didn't even see it. That didn't even make $2 million. And Liam Neeson's, I think, getting to the end of his run. The other piece of news I wanted to hit really quickly is HBO Max is putting in production, and this is something we heard about during development. There's a series called Welcome to Derry that is spinning off of the It franchise. And apparently, you know, Stephen King's given his blessing, but then again, he gave his blessing to a lot of garbage. So I hopefully this will be good. It has Andy Muschietti behind it, who had done the first It. I'm looking forward to it. I hope that they're able to give a decent version of the It universe. I'm looking to see them expand on that and expand on the entity that is Pennywise the Clown. So yeah, I am looking forward to the Welcome to Derry series. I just hope I do not get disappointed. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is coming up on Apple TV Plus on March 15th, and that is Tetris.
It's a combination of Tetra, Greek for four, and tennis.
Tennis?
The Russian inventor, he likes tennis.
This game isn't just addictive, it stays with you. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Hank, only 10 other people in the world have seen what you're about to see. It's called the Game Boy.
Package them with Tetris. Can you get us the rights? I'm gonna go to Moscow.
You're walking into a country
that still considers America enemy numero uno.
Okie dokie.
I did not know this true story. Apparently, there's a pretty crazy, almost spy-level espionage type of story behind the development of the video game Tetris, because it was created by a Russian and it turned into this big thing to try and get the rights to it. Because of course, back then you were dealing with the Soviet Union. I mean, you're talking about going behind the Iron Curtain, and this looks like it's actually pretty good. I'm interested in it. I remember when Tetris came into being, it wasn't as like groundbreaking as something like Pac-Man, but it was a big deal. It was a huge thing when it came out. I mean, this is the equivalent of what Candy Crush was back in the 80s. So I am looking forward to that one. The next one I want to hit is actually, this is a Super Bowl spot, and it's terrible in terms of playing on the radio, but I want to do it anyways because it's a Transformers movie. You've got Transformers Rise of the Beasts, which comes to theaters on June 9th.
It was all a dream.
Woo!
The name's Mirage.
Come on.
Give me a little tap.
I'm
blowing up like
you thought I would.
Call the trip,
same number, same button. It's
all good.
Pull over!
I'm not driving!
Huh.
Yeah.
Nah, 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 nah.
Relax. A mirage, remember?
And if you don't know, now you know.
As you can tell, there's very little dialogue in the trailer, and I have a feeling that's indicative of the movie because there is not a whole lot of substantive dialogue in the Transformers movies. One of the biggest reasons I'm interested in this is because, with the exception of Bumblebee, it's the first regular Transformers movie that is not being directed by Michael Bay. And look, whether or not it's love Michael Bay or hate Michael Bay, give somebody else a chance to do something with it. And that's one of the things I loved so much about Bumblebee, is it was a different take. It wasn't just the Michael Bay beer commercial version of a Transformers movie. It actually gave an interesting story. And this one, I don't know if it's going to be any good. I mean, like I said, you get nothing out of this trailer aside from the fact that Pete Davidson is playing one of the robots. And it's the closest you can get from it. I don't know. I've yet to see any semblance of a plot, but let's hope it has something more than the garbage that was in the last 46 Transformers movies that were done by Michael Bay. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about the film Jesus Revolution and the series The Consultant. We all love the Manscaped personal grooming products, but we all come to a personal quandary when wanting to trim above the equator. Now there's a solution. Manscaped now sells beard products. The Beard Hedger Pro Kit comes with all you'll need to keep your furry face under control, from a trim to a fresh shave. And when you use the code FATGUYS, you get 20% off and free shipping. The Beard Hedger is a cordless trimmer that uses a single rotary blade with 20 hair-cutting lengths. And you know what that means? No keeping track of multiple attachments, dropping them on the floor, and having them fly under the toilet. It's one guard that gives you multiple options. The titanium-coated T-blades cut through the facial hair quickly and smoothly, while Manscaped keeps your face as safe as your privates. The Beard Hedger Pro Kit includes additional accoutrements, like a specialized beard shampoo and conditioner, because your hair on your face isn't the same as the hair on your head, or anywhere else. There's also the Manscaped Beard Oil and Beard Balm, and the kit also includes a beard brush, a specialized beard comb, and scissors to clean up any strays. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com, and use code FATGUYS. Manscaped Beard Hedger. One stroke, one guard, 20 lengths. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about Jesus Revolution. A conservative pastor in the late 60s partners with a hippie leader to spread the gospel of Jesus.
These people are hippies, rebels against old-fashioned authority.
I think these kids need help.
What they need is a bath.
You're passing judgment on people you know nothing about.
Maybe that's why your church is so empty.
When God walks in here, brings me a hippie, I'll ask him what it's all about.
This house has a very good vibe. There is an entire generation searching just in all the wrong places. If you want to reach my people, you need to speak to them in a language they understand.
If I bring them in, I'm going to lose my job.
This is a true story. It actually is. It's about a group of hippies that started, well, they kind of became known as Jesus Freaks. That was the name of the group of Christians that did this little sect of Christianity that developed under the following of this guy named Lonnie Frisbee. I guess that's really his name. And Kelsey Grammer plays the character of Chuck Smith, who's this conservative pastor who ends up inviting them into his church. Not everybody was going to Gurus on the Mountain and looking up Eastern medicine or anything like that. There were people who fell into this. Now, I did a little reading on this. And then when I say a little reading, I looked at the Wikipedia entry. This was a group of hippies that rejected things that were well known in the hippie movement, stuff like free love and drug use and alcohol use. And it was a place where you could be that you weren't in the more dangerous elements of it, I guess you could say. If you ever saw the musical Godspell, that's kind of what the Jesus Revolution hippie movement was. Taken as a faith-based religious film, it's better than most. I mean, it's actually a coherent film. One of the things I've always railed against faith-based movies is the production value is terrible. Or the writing is so clunky and the acting is so stilted that it feels like it's done by a community theater group. And there have been some that have risen above it, no pun intended. And this is actually very well done. In terms of a movie that tells a story and has a plot and has a structure, it actually works. Here's where my problems start with it. Whether you're making a biopic of somebody, especially somebody whose family is involved or that person's still alive, like even Rocket Man or Jesse Owens, his story, all the way to doing something that either has a political side or a religious side, you're not wanting to show the ugliest parts of it. And there's a lot of ugly things that happened in the story behind this. In particular, the character, Lonnie Frisbee, who's a real person, they completely whitewash his character out. The guy was very troubled. He was also a openly bisexual man and got rejected by the church, and he ended up dying of AIDS. So these are things that are sort of swept away, and they don't address it even at the end when they show pictures of the people and they say what really happened to the real people. Not a single mention of that. And I felt that that's a little bit disingenuous. I that shouldn't be done that way, because it shows your hand a little bit too much. It shows that you are trying to hide elements of it. And some of the pastors that are involved in this, like there's one of them who's was kind of kooky. I mean, he was like saying that 9/11 happened in retaliation for homosexuality and abortion. And I'm like, first of all, how does that work? You're talking Crazy Town stuff at this point. So there's elements to the movie that is very cleaned up. And so taking the movie as its own, yeah, it tells this really nice, sweet story. But when you put together some of the reality behind it and you actually look at some of the real stories, it does seem to get very troubling and bothersome. I mean, it's a sanitized version of the true story. It's literally going to preach to the choir. But it hides its unfortunate darker side. And I think that goes against it. Have the guts to show the good and the bad that comes with the humans that build your religion. Trying to hide that makes it sort of insidious in a weird way. It does have these glaring problems and these glaring holes in it. But again, you know, if all you want is that sanitized version of the Jesus movement from the early 70s, you get this. But I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next up is The Consultant. This is available on Prime Video. A mysterious consultant offers advice for a struggling gaming company, which requires going above and beyond what would normally be asked.
We work for the most successful mobile game studio in Los Angeles. But suddenly, our CEO is gone. And then he arrived.
So, who's the suit?
He's a consultant.
Good morning, comrades. My job is to observe, to streamline, to improve.
He's firing Ian. Says he doesn't like the way he smells.
Bow your heads and pray for him.
This stars Christoph Waltz as this mysterious consultant who comes in after the death of the head of this app gaming company. And nobody knows exactly how he got the job. Nobody knows exactly how he ascended to any sort of power, and he basically takes things over. And one of the things, just to begin with, all the elements of the series I do like. There's this weird, dark, comedic element. I really like that. I like the fact that it's not a knee slapper. It's more presenting somewhat of an insane premise. I like the fact that it's not trying to hide things too cleverly, or maybe it is. It's just not doing a very good job, because there's a lot of stuff in there that you can kind of really just see right through. Even just watching the opening credits, you kind of have an idea what's happening, that they're kind of holding back probably for the last couple episodes. But the series gets a little on the nose at times, and it's very frustrating because as you're watching it, you're thinking, well, they'd have lawyers in the next day. I mean, how is this actually happening? And how is this not being challenged by anybody else? There's realities of the business world for any company that's even mildly successful, even if it's a relatively minor gaming company in Los Angeles. You're still going to have sharks swimming around the blood in the water, but nobody seems to care. And there's no question about equal opportunity. There's like a scene where he tells the people that if they don't show up at a certain time, they're going to get fired, and they fire a woman in a wheelchair. And I'm like, she would be immediately going down to the Equal Opportunity Commission and saying, hey, no, you didn't account for this. And there'd be so many lawsuits again, but somehow they just ignore all that, because I think it's supposed to come at the problem from that millennial / Generation Z worker who is living in a very different world than their parents or grandparents did when they started working, where you are asked to do insane things. You know, like, it's sort of like, this is made for the people who want to quietly quit. Well, quiet quitting for me, when I was working in the 90s, quiet quitting was just called going home when your hours were up. When I first had a job, nobody was working more hours than they were paid to work. Now, if you were salaried, tough crap, you had to do unpaid overtime. But if you were paid an hourly wage, you didn't go and stay late unless they paid you extra money. So there's some neat stuff in here, and there's some questions that I want to see answered, and there's some curiosity. I'm about 3 or 4 episodes in. It's also only a half hour, which I kind of like. Like The Patient, that thing with Steve Carell on Hulu, those episodes I think are 30 minutes. It makes it much easier to watch if you're trying to just sort of fit it in throughout the day. So ultimately, with The Consultant, I enjoy the dark comedic edge to this, and it seems to skewer that easy target of the 21st century business models, but it sometimes plays very frustrating and telegraphed. I'm going to say that The Consultant kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Cocaine Bear and Linoleum. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the one everybody's talking about. And that is Cocaine Bear. A bear finds a dump stash of cocaine in the woods and goes on a drug-fueled rampage.
Millions of dollars worth of cocaine fell from the sky this morning in Knoxville, Tennessee.
There's more of this out there.
They dumped it somewhere.
I'm looking for my daughter.
Forest is a dangerous place.
Hey, Henry.
Check it out. Something got into it.
A deer, maybe.
A lot of cocaine was lost.
I need you to go and get it.
No. Don't eat that.
Let's see what kind of effect that has on us.
A bear did cocaine.
This is actually based on a true story. And I mean, what's funny, the true stories is pretty mundane. It's just they found a dead bear in the woods back in 1985 that had gotten into a stash of cocaine and eaten some of it, but it ended up dying pretty quickly. There's no evidence at all that this bear went on a rampage or anything like that, but that doesn't stop Hollywood from making a movie out of it. And the real bear is known as Pablo Escobar. The plane was traveling with cocaine over the southern part. I think it was over Georgia or Tennessee, and then it ended up dropping its stash. So they decided to make this movie, and it's directed by Elizabeth Banks. And that may, to some people, seem like a strange person to have directed. But look, she is a wicked comedian. She has some very, very funny stuff, and she's also very sarcastic and sardonic. She's the double SARS on this one. It works for this movie. Ultimately, it's just a big goof of a film. It's a horror comedy. It has these over-the-top characters. You've got like Ray Liotta playing the drug lord, you know, rest in peace. He's trying to get his cocaine back. You've got O'Shea Jackson is the one of the guys going to try and find the cocaine. You've got Kerry Russell playing a mother whose daughter is lost in the woods at the time. You've got Margot Martindale playing a sex-crazed park ranger who's got the hots for Jesse Tyler Ferguson. It's just such a bizarre casting of a movie, but it's very funny. But here's the thing. It's not just a goof movie. It's not like a trauma film. It's not like an asylum movie. She actually cuts her teeth or sharpens her teeth as a director and delivers some authentic horror moments. When the bear is attacking, I mean, there's some silly things going on where the bear is getting high on cocaine, and there's the comedic moments, and there's some tongue-in-cheek moments, but there's legit horror elements to this. There are scenes that are reminiscent of a slasher movie. So it's sort of this mixture of a slasher film and one of those animal attack movies from the 70s or 80s. I mean, stuff like, and these are all bear movies, like The Prophecy, not the one with Christopher Walken, but the one with the giant bear, or like Day of the Animals, or Grizzly. These bear attack movies, they all stemmed off of Jaws, because once they had Jaws out there, everybody wanted some wild animal movie. And that's really what it feels like in a lot of ways. And it takes place in 1985, so it's sort of appropriate for the decade. It's got a great soundtrack by Mark Mothersbaugh. And I found it funny. I mean, it's not a knee slapper. It's not like just a nonstop humorous movie. It's also less of an action movie and more of a horror movie, although it does have some action-oriented scenes. But really, she does a really good job with the creepy moments. I'm like, give her a James Wan movie. Put her somewhere in the Conjuring franchise or Insidious franchise and let her have a chance to do something that's bona fide scary. And I think Elizabeth Banks could be fantastic. I don't know if she's ever going to be the Oscar winning director. I don't know if she's ever going to or even wants to do something like The Fabelmans by Steven Spielberg. Give her some pulp stuff, because she's got a real knack for it. She has a love for pulpy cinema. You can tell because she likes doing it. And, you know, I almost kind of want to go back and rewatch her Charlie's Angels movie, because I, even though I didn't like that, I'm wondering if maybe it was her just having a little more fun with it than she really could justify for the decade. But, you know, Cocaine Bear, I was surprised at how authentic it felt as a movie, even with these over-the-top characters and insane premise. And there are a couple, like O'Shea Jackson and Kerry Russell, they kind of ground the film. They're sort of the audience surrogate. They're the voice of reason. But it's violent and bloody. Look, it's not a kid's movie. Don't... It's for adults. It's bloody and it's R-rated and it's very, very violent. But it's very funny. It evokes sort of the horror comedy elements that you had with stuff like Tucker and Dale versus Evil. And I thought that movie was very clever. It's very different than that, but it plays with convention and it plays with genre. So it's a fun, bloody mess of a film and a throwback to the Animal Attack movies of the 70s and 80s. I'm going to say that Cocaine Bear rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Linoleum. A flailing astronomer faces a midlife crisis as he tries to deal with a suffering marriage, workplace woes, and a rebellious teenage daughter.
My dad used to always say, there are two kinds of people in the world, Cameron. Astronomers and astronauts. Some look at the stars, others swim in them.
He's like my antithesis.
What?
Some old Russian rocket fell from outer space and it crashed in our backyard.
You've got this pile of rocket crap right here. Why don't you just build your own rocket?
It's not that simple.
Yeah, it might be.
This is released by Shout Studios, and they don't release a whole lot of movies theatrically. They do a lot of DVD and Blu-ray work and VOD stuff. They've got like a Shout Factory television station. They do a lot of stuff with sort of genre pieces like cult classics and that sort of thing. They're a little more accessible than a place like Vinegar Syndrome or something like that. But it stars Jim Gaffigan as this astronomer who, and it's got this surreal nature because this satellite crashes in his backyard and he has to move out, but he's having his marriage is on the rocks, and he's kind of like a Bill Nye that never took off. He's doing this crappy TV show about science on the UHF station somewhere in Ohio, and they're not allowing him to continue with it. And they basically bring in somebody else who's played by Jim Gaffigan, who's basically a better looking, more put together version of Jim Gaffigan. And his wife's played by Rhea Seehorn. And the big problem with her is she's just not given enough to do. She has really made a name for herself. When she got onto Better Call Saul, she really impressed a lot of people, including myself. So I wish they had more for her to chew on. It's not her story. It's Jim Gaffigan's story. And he does a great job. He's actually gone from just being a goofy stand-up comedian to having some decent acting chops, impressive acting chops. There's a surreal element to it that reminds me of those surreal indie films of the 90s. And I like that feel. The only problem is it's very hard to sustain something like that and have a good solid payoff. So it's a bit predictable when you're watching it and you're winding down and things are coming to the end. You're like, I'll bet you they're going this way. And you might be right, because that's what I thought. And I pretty much predicted what was going on in the film. It's an interesting approach, but it at times tries to be like a Charlie Kaufman movie, but doesn't quite achieve the uniqueness that a Charlie Kaufman movie does. But it does manage to have the surreal nature to make it work. And I mean, it's off kilter and poignant as a lighter look at the heart of a midlife crisis, because ultimately that's what this guy's going through. He's got this midlife crisis with his marriage, his kid, and his job. We all have to deal with that at some point in our life. And it's also that woeful, melancholy look back on where you wanted your life to go and where it is now. And everybody deals with that. You know, even if you're rich and famous and super wealthy, you're going to hit the skids at some point. And everybody, when they're in high school and you're getting ready to go off to wherever you're going after high school, you think you're going to conquer the world. But the world also comes crashing back down on you and you have to live in the doldrums like everybody else. And it's a man trying to reconcile that. I mean, so it works. I'm going to say that Linoleum kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Kunk on Earth. and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Fawlty Towers. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews and talk about Kunk on Earth. No, that is nothing dirty. For all you people that have picked up your phone and you're ready to call your radio station and complain, I didn't say anything wrong. Kunk on Earth. It's about a character named Philomena Kunk. It's not a big surprise. I like British programming. I watch a lot of it. Got to remember, I grew up in a household where we didn't have cable, so my only choice of entertainment sometimes was PBS. And they showed stuff like Monty Python and Doctor Who and Fawlty Towers, which we'll be talking about later. So I got a very much a taste for British comedy. And Kunk on Earth is a real series. It's 5 episodes on Netflix. It came out a couple weeks ago, so I haven't had a chance to review it. I didn't see it early, and I ended up catching it because it seemed absurd enough, and I saw that it was sort of meant to be absurd comedy. The fake British historian Philomena Kunk offers her insights into the history of our planet.
Apparently, I've only been given half a minute to tell you about my venture up humanity. That's hardly long enough to explain the pyramids.
It's obviously just big bricks in a triangle.
I'll be asking questions.
What was the Soviet Union?
And go to every corner of a globe without corners.
Do we know if China has a roof?
So join me, Philomena Kunk.
This is Kunk on Earth!
Was that quick enough for you?
As you can tell, this is a very dry humor situation, which is a very British way of doing things, where this extremely self-important historian waxes not so poetically about everything and gets stuff startlingly wrong. You know, she talks about the Soviet Union. And he's like, don't you mean the Soviet Union? And what's brilliant about this is she actually brings in real historians and professors and academics and interviews them. And I'm sure they're prepped and saying, look, we're not, you know, this isn't David Attenborough talking to you or anything like that. Just answer the questions. We're not making fun of you. We just want, it helps to get your response. So everybody seems to play the game with her, which is what makes it work, because they try to answer some of these absurd questions. Like another one of the questions she asks at one point, she's interviewing somebody and she's talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis. And she asks somebody about the cube and missile crisis. And she says, why would they use cubes? They're square. They're like rocks. They don't go very far. A missile makes sense, but you can't send a cube over the ocean to hit the United States. It's those kind of questions. And it's totally absurd because she's a complete dunderhead. And Philomena Kunk is a character who's been in British TV for a while. She did a series called Kunk on Britain, but she does like world history. She tries to go through everything in 5 episodes, and they do a whole section on the United States, which is really interesting for somebody like me to watch because it's the UK impression of what the US is. And some of the description and ideas are spot on, and some of them are absurd and borderline offensive. But I just have to laugh at it. Here's the thing. It is extremely funny. Like I said, it's dry and absurd, and it will throw a bunch of curveballs at you, even if you know what the premise is. Because the premise is the joke, but it's what's said and the uncomfortable silence and the replies that make it work. And plus, she also manages somehow she managed to shoehorn Pump Up the Jam into every single episode. And then they play the video for like 35 seconds, which if you don't know anything about video editing, 35 seconds is an eternity to play something with no commentary on it, especially in a half hour show. That's what makes it so funny. It is that witty, dry British humor that I like. I mean, like I said, British drenched dry humor, and it offers some hilarious moments and some actually clever takes on history and humanity. I'm going to say Kunk on Earth totally rocks. It's on Netflix right now. Totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the Home Cinema Roundup. Today's spotlight is on Fawlty Towers, and there's a reason I chose this. Partly because I watched The British Empire a couple weeks ago, And that's been heralded as a, well, I mean, back in the 90s, it was heralded as a new Fawlty Towers of this absurd workplace humor. And it's very different, but it brought my interest for Fawlty Towers. And then in the news a couple weeks ago, we found out that John Cleese and his daughter are rebooting Fawlty Towers and are going to be doing new episodes. I don't know where it's going to air, but I said, this is a perfect time to pull up my old DVDs. And yes, I have them on DVD. To watch my old DVDs of Fawlty Towers. John Cleese stars in this farcical sitcom about a married couple struggling to keep their small hotel afloat.
Fawlty? What's wrong with it?
I'm the manager.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, I know. You've just told me. What's the matter with you?
Is this a piece of your brain?
For the first time in my life, I'm winning.
Now, this is written by John Cleese and Connie Booth, who were married at the time when they did the first season. And then they broke up and they did a second season and they're both in it. But apparently Connie Booth, she didn't want to talk about it afterwards. And she doesn't get her due on this because she's very funny in the show. And she absolutely was integral to writing it, but most people immediately think of John Cleese when they think of Fawlty Towers. And the fact that it's getting rebooted and it's not going to have Connie Booth in it, it'll have John Cleese, and it's his daughter's going to be involved. Probably the woman who played his wife isn't going to be in it. I think she's still alive, but she's like 90. And the guy who played Manuel, their Spanish, I guess, bellhop or waiter, he did everything. He was sort of like filled whatever gaps you had to fill. He passed away, I don't know, like 8 or 10 years ago. And obviously, so they don't have him, but it's just really John Cleese is going to be that connected tissue. And of course, there's a lot of people who complain about John Cleese now because he's kind of old and he's had his spats with cancel culture and, you know, he said some anti-trans things and it's caused a little bit of furor on his end. And it's funny because he came out and like quote unquote apologized for this. It's a fake apology, but he's apologizing. He's doing this because a lot of people are like, don't mess with Fawlty Towers. Don't mess with what was perfect. You're just going to ruin it. And he's like, I'm sorry. I wanted to do something fun. And in the process, he's referencing there's an episode of Fawlty Towers called The Germans, which following the George Floyd protests, it was one of the shows that got pulled out of the lineup on streaming. And there was other things like The Office pulled an episode that had blackface in it. And there's a bunch of British shows like Little Britain that have blackface in it and Come Fly With Me. They pulled some blackface and yellowface episodes of that because of the racial sensitivity issues that were really boiling overboard at the time. And the reason I believe they pulled this episode is because earlier in the episode, they use the N-word, but they're referring it to Indians from India, which is a very British thing, especially from the 70s. It's wrong and it's derogatory, but even then it's sort of presented as this guy's sort of an old fuddy-duddy. But that's, I think, the reason they pulled that off of BritBox a couple years ago. And he thinks John Cleese is responding to it because he keeps accidentally mentioning World War II to these German guests. And he does this Hitler impression and he thinks that's what got it kicked off. But it's not that. Nobody's getting on your case because you made fun of Hitler, man. It's because of the language at the beginning of the episode. So John Cleese is an old fuddy-duddy who doesn't understand how social norms are working now, which I think is going to make it even better because he's going to struggle with this himself because I think his daughter's going to be like, Dad, you can't do that now. And he's going to get mad and he's basically going to become Basil Fawlty in the process of remaking the show. But that's the new show that's coming up and I'm looking forward to that. I'm very curious about it. I don't know if it's going to be any good. But this original series, it's only 12 episodes. And right now you can't get them anywhere except you can buy episodes from the first season on Apple TV Plus for $1.99 a piece. You can't get anything for the second season, but the DVDs are still out there. Only 6 episodes per season because Britain. And then there's only 2 seasons. So there's 12 episodes and the first episode's okay. And it's not until you get into later episodes that you really spotlight John Cleese's physical comedy and the fact that he is high strung and the character is so perfect. And Manuel as the manservant for the hotel is such a sweet guy and never gets mad at anybody. And Connie Booth is a nice balancing factor in this just to kind of ground the series a little bit because John Cleese is so over the top. It is a wickedly funny show. It is very, very funny. There's a lot of people in America who are familiar with it because it was on PBS throughout the 80s. I know you can find episodes on YouTube, and like I said, you can buy them on Apple TV+. I think there's one episode somewhere that's available to buy on BritBox. But otherwise, I got to say, this is something that's worth checking out. It's something worth seeing. It's old. Yeah, I mean, it's an old series. All the jokes are obviously from 1975, but it is still extremely funny. It's one of the best British sitcoms that's ever been made. I mean, it's a fantastic spotlight on John Cleese's physical comedy, and it is clear why this is a landmark comedy for the BBC. Fawlty Towers totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it for this week. I gotta go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Creed 3 and Children of the Corn. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.